Welcome back to the Doherty Report. I'm Elizabeth Doherty. We have a very special guest on the phone, a friend of the Doherty Report, I would like to say, Dr. Peter Pry from the Congressional Task Force on Nuclear Threats and EMP Threats. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we really appreciate your time. And, you know, there's been a lot of developments over the last nearly 100 days of the presidency, the new presidency. What do you think about it?
Well, I think that we are indeed living through very perilous times.
Yeah.
I think people are underestimating the North Korean nuclear threat.
Really?
Absolutely. You know, the mainstream view continues to reflect in the media, which has always been an echo chamber for the Obama administration, but even many conservative people who should know better, you know, continue along this line that North Korea probably does not yet know how to miniaturize nuclear warheads or build reentry vehicles for atmospheric reentry. And therefore, you know, they can't deliver on their threats to make a nuclear missile strike against the United States technologically. That they're some say they're almost there, others say they're still 5 years away. But the evidence is, you know, that they have had this capability for quite some time. Miniaturizing a warhead so it can fit on a missile and building a reentry vehicle are minor technological challenges compared to being able to conduct nuclear, to build nuclear weapons and to conduct a nuclear missile test and to be able to launch multi-stage missiles that have long range. Those are the serious technological challenges, and they have demonstrated that they have mastered those technological challenges.
Correct.
The possible exception of the reliability of their missiles isn't all that great, maybe. But now we know that the Obama administration was waging cyber warfare against the North Korean missile program. I don't criticize that. They should have done more than wage cyber warfare. But most of the, we don't know whether the North Korean missile failures were due to their inability to master the engineering perfectly and to perfect their missiles. It may well be that they've had such bad luck, you know, because of the cyber attacks that the United States has been making on their missile systems, you know. And now, unfortunately, WikiLeaks, about a month ago, in the past month, you know, leaked the CIA toolkit for waging cyber warfare. So now the North Koreans know about it, and they may be able to start protecting their missiles against cyber interference. My concern is that the nuclear missile threat from North Korea is still being grossly underestimated, that they, Jim Woolsey, my former CIA director, and I published an article in The Hill a couple of weeks ago laying out congressional testimony from the Department of Defense.
I saw that.
You know, that where they have said in public that the official DOD view is that they do have long-range nuclear missiles, ICBMs, that can reach the United States and strike the United States, and that they probably have mastered nuclear warhead miniaturization and reentry vehicle technology. I mean, I'm really surprised that they've gotten, that the press has gone along for so long in this denial behavior about the North Korean missile threat. You know, I have never heard anybody ever raising the questions about warhead miniaturization or the ability to be a build reentry vehicle with the nuclear missile programs of any other nation. You know, no one ever said, well, we can't say that India is a nuclear power yet because they haven't demonstrated warhead miniaturization or reentry vehicles, or that Pakistan, or that Israel, or that France is not really legitimately a nuclear missile state yet because they haven't mastered these two minor technological challenges. And they are minor technological challenges. In fact, miniaturization is really not a technological challenge at all anymore. You know, the reason there was a time when it was a significant technological challenge in the 1950s, you know, because we were relying on vacuum tube technology for the electronics that had to go into the warhead, and that stuff was very heavy. You know, the microelectronics revolution was a spinoff you know, from our building transistors and then later semiconductors to to miniaturize the electronics. And we did that, but not just for our own nuclear. I mean, because it became commercially available, you know, we solved the miniaturization problem for the entire world. You know, you can go into any electronics store and buy miniaturized electronics now.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just ridiculous. As for the reentry vehicle, well, how is that a problem? You know, all missiles, whether or not they have a nuclear weapon on them, have some kind of reentry vehicle. You know, so the reentry vehicle is no mystery. You know, every Scud has got a reentry vehicle on it. It's just a question of, can the reentry vehicle be designed to handle the velocities of an intercontinental delivery? And there's no mystery about how to do that. So you just strengthen the reentry vehicle. You make the metal a little thicker. You make the ablative materials on the outside more robust to handle the temperature. I mean, how is that a complicated issue compared to building a nuclear bomb or compared to building a multi-stage missile? You know, it isn't. It's simple. So this is just absurd, and I'm amazed at how gullible the public is. I can only and the press too. It's just, you know, the scientific illiteracy that abounds among journalists. And of course, you know, I have written about this as well, about how the Obama administration back in 2013, they're the ones who first put out, and it was the president himself. In fact, I can give you the day. It was April 16th, 2013, when we were in the midst of the third big nuclear crisis with North Korea. They had illegally tested in February of that year. And Kim Jong-un started at that time making threats to strike the United States with nuclear missiles. And President Obama told the New York Times, oh, they can't do that yet. You know, they haven't mastered warhead miniaturization, you know, so they can prove they can put it on a reentry vehicle. And this is when they injected this disinformation into the press. And the press has never let go of it. The reason the president did that, and by the way, on that same day, there was a briefing, classified briefing given to the Congress, which was then later leaked to the press, that showed the intelligence community thought just the opposite, and that, in fact, North Korea had mastered warhead miniaturization and reentry vehicles and had, at least on its medium-range NODAW nuclear missile, that 8 years ago had deployed, you know, nuclear warheads on its missiles, at least on the NODAW. You know, anyway, that's been out there for years, and the people and the denial behavior still continues in the press. So,
the truth
is, North Korea can deliver on these threats right now to strike the United States with long range. It's got two ICBMs, the KN-08 and KN-14. They may have a third. You know, there was on this recent parade over the weekend. There was a big launch canister,
right,
even bigger than the KN-14, that if it had a missile inside of it, would have been an intercontinental
huge
missile.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, people speculate, well, was there a missile in that canister? Was it disinformation? You know, we are always, and it's true, the North Korean government is often responsible for trying to mislead and have disinformation. But a lot of the record is they also, our journalists and so-called analysts often get it wrong, too. And the direction we tend to err in the West is by grossly underestimating North Korea. An example of this is the Musudan intermediate-range ballistic missile. You know, it was deployed 9 years ago. And for 9 years, because the North Koreans had never flight tested it, and all you can see is the launch canister, okay?
Right.
For 9 years, most analysts were saying, oh, it's a fake missile. It isn't a real missile. You know, it's just a fake launch canister that they're rolling around to try to scare us. And then last year, they flight tested it, okay? Mm-hmm. And they finally did. The last two flight tests were successful.
Wow.
The press is exaggerating its rate of failure. They're calling it an 88% failure rate. It actually had a 60% failure rate because it wasn't one in five tests that were successful. Two of the five tests were successful.
Got
and
it.
The last two were successful, which shows that it's, you know, they obviously had ironed out the kinks. And it was done in a rapid series of tests, amazingly fast, over a span of just a few weeks. You know, it went from having three failures to two successes in just a few weeks, which suggests there wasn't anything mechanically wrong with the missile, you know, but it was probably, they had to master operation, get their operational procedures right to to launch the missile right. For all these things that have been running around the forests, I mean, think about that. Here's a missile that's been deployed for 9 years, running around the forests and mountains of North Korea. It's a mobile missile. And then the dear leader decides he wants it flight tested for political reasons. Mm-hmm. And his people, you know, suddenly, for the first time in 9 years, the thing has to be launched. And, okay, the first 3 year failure, but then the last two are successful. That's pretty good. Far better than if it were a developmental system. It would take years if it were really a developmental system. Well, they've demonstrated. They've got a submarine. It's called the Simpo class submarine. You know, it can carry one or two ballistic missiles. Mm-hmm. And they successfully tested that in the last year. And then the press is largely saying, well, they don't really have a submarine yet because they haven't engaged in the kind of flight testing program that the United States would engage in.
The Korean satellites are flying over the southern part of our country, and are they, do you think they're nuclear equipped?
Well, they might be. You know, we don't know one way or the other. And they're not flying over the southern part of the country. They've passed from south to north. So it's possible that they're practicing for a nuclear EMP attack that way. Or they could have warheads on them right now. Kim Jong-un is a high-risk player. You know, he's, as I've described him, as Caligula with nuclear missiles.
Yes.
You know, it's exactly the kind of high-risk thing he would do, is to actually put nuclear weapons up there. In fact, he said several threatening things this week, you know, that imply that he could pose a nuclear threat to us. Yesterday, I think it was, the North Korean press talked about destroying the whole United States with, quote-unquote, thunderbolts. All right, not just the city, but reducing the whole country to ashes with thunderbolts, and that he could do the same thing to the Allies.
That's basically an EMP threat.
Yeah, lightning is what a thunderbolt is.
Right.
In the midst of this 100-day crisis we've been going through with him, in response to U.S. diplomatic and military moves to pressure North Korea, he threatened to launch another satellite. Now, the satellite is supposed to be a peaceful program, although it's controlled by the North Korean military. So how is it that in his public statement, this was come from Kim Jong-un himself, how is launching a satellite an appropriate military response to U.S. military pressure?
Unless there's
unless there's something he can do with those satellites that would pose a military threat to the United States. And there is something he can do with those satellites, because they're flying they look just like a secret weapon that the Soviets planned to use during the Cold War, called the Fractional Orbital Bombardment System. And the idea here was that you put a nuclear weapon inside of a satellite. In this case, it would be a specialized nuclear weapon. It's specialized, a small nuclear weapon. It's not designed to produce a big explosion, but it's designed to put out a huge gamma ray pulse, which is what causes the electromagnetic pulse effect.
Right.
And disguise this thing as a satellite, and launch it to the south, so it's going away from the United States on its initial trajectory, so it doesn't look threatening. It looks just like you're launching a satellite. Then it goes down over Antarctica and comes up from the south. Now, we're blind and defenseless from the south, because we have no ballistic missile early warning radars facing that way. We have no interceptors facing that
where
way.
I am.
and as it comes up from the south, passes over South America, you know, and then goes from south to north, passes up completely over the United States. Then it'll go over the North Pole. And when it gets up there, up in Canada, then our national missile defense could shoot it down. But it passes over us first before it gets in range of the national defense. And so they've got an opportunity, if there was a weapon on that thing, to detonate it before we can shoot it down. And we don't even know where it is, because there's no ballistic missile early warning radars looking for it.
How much technology do you think they're getting from Russia?
They're getting a lot of their technology from Russia and China both. For example, the two ICBMs that I described, the KN-08 and the KN-14, are both based on a Russian missile called the SSN-6 SERB. The Russians sold them one of those things, allegedly for scrap, and they also sold them about a dozen Gulf-class ballistic missile submarines, allegedly for scrap.
Are those the ones you can't see, like the stealth?
And let them get away. Pardon?
Are those the ones you can't see, like the stealth submarines?
No, these are older class submarines. The Gulf is a noisy old submarine. It's one of the first submarines. But what I think the Chinese and the Russians have both been doing, okay, because we've been amazed at the rapid evolution of the North Korean nuclear missile program. Don't forget, North Korea is supposed to be a backward country. It can't even feed its own people, okay?
Yeah,
but today,
starving.
They are orbiting satellites, and they've gotten mobile ICBMs, not only one, but two different classes of mobile ICBMs, okay? Not even the United States has got a mobile ICBM.
Wow.
The only countries in the world that have got mobile ICBMs are Russia, China, and now North Korea. And the ICBMs themselves are derivative from a Russian missile. And the TELs, that is the transporter erector launchers, because it's no small thing. It's a high-tech thing to be able to move an ICBM around. They're very heavy. You know, there are all kinds of specialized characteristics for a transporter erector launcher. They're not easy to build. But North Korea's TELs are from China, okay? So, you know, here are two of the most important pieces of technology from Russia and China. And we were told the EMP Commission was demarched in 2004 mm-hmm. by Russian generals who were their top EMP experts. And they warned us that back in 2004, that the design for the Russian super EMP warhead had accidentally leaked to North Korea. And by the way,
that's 13 years ago.
Yes. And by the way, there were Russian scientists who, through brain drain, Russian and Chinese scientists were working in North Korea on super EMP weapons and missile technology. And we know that that's true, that there are Russian and Chinese scientists in their program. And the State Department, though, and the people who like to deny these threats say, well, none of this stuff is because of the Russian government. We can't prove that the Russian and Chinese governments are doing this. These are independent scientists who are looking for better work, or independent industries that are breaking the law and selling the technology to North Korea. And so we can't blame Moscow and we can't blame Beijing. You know, they just don't have complete control of their systems. And if you believe that, then there's a bridge in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I would like tell you, you know, I think it's very obvious. I don't know why others, you know, that Russia and North Korea is a cat's paw for Russia and China. It's being used to advance their geostrategic interests without them having to directly confront the United States and put themselves at risk. You know, what they're trying to do is so frighten the United States and our allies that they will break up our Pacific alliances and begin a process of U.S. isolationism, where we basically, they know the American people are suffering from war fatigue, you know, from the long war on global terror, that we don't want to put ourselves and at risk and put our sons and daughters at risk in foreign wars anymore. And they would love to encourage that isolationism, move the United States to disengage from the world. Because the current world order, or the world order that had been so hopeful in the aftermath of the Cold War, where everything looked like it was evolving in the direction of free institutions, free politics, free economies, you know, that has been stopped by the global war on terror. And the United States is deeply demoralized about continuing this role as the world's superpower, okay? Mm-hmm. But that hope for freedom was all based on U.S. strength and U.S. And if they can scare us into an isolationist posture, it will knock the props out from under that very promising world order that seemed to be evolving, and it will enable it'll create an opportunity for them to take over and to create a new world order in which Russia and China, North Korea and Iran are basically the leaders of this new world order that is going to be based on the kinds of things that we're seeing today, threats, terrorism, the threat of war or actual wars themselves, to go from a position, I think of it as a new Dark Ages. You know, the United States has been sort of like Rome during the Pax Romana, you know, this period of long prosperity and basically unbroken peace, where we haven't had major world wars or anything. you know, unprecedented in history to have such a long period. And you may recall, I mean, if you look up your history, you know, it looked, mankind looked like we were heading on a pretty self-destructive course in the early 20th century with one world war after another. But we stopped that and created a new world order. There were scary elements about it, you know, because it was upheld by nuclear deterrence. And but we kept the peace, and there was no world war for a long time. Okay, it still hasn't been one. But if that Pax Americana ends, you know, it'll be like a new Dark Ages, you know, where you've got other actors will retreat into a Fortress America. And maybe we should. I know there's a lot of my libertarian friends think that we should, you know, and maybe we should. The risks have gotten so high, and many of our allies are not willing to bear their fair share of the burden, you know, of defense. That's what Trump has been criticized so much about, you know, about withdrawing from NATO.
Mm-hmm.
But he was making a legitimate criticism, you know, because there are only a handful of these states are spending enough on their own defense, okay? Most of NATO has been freeloading on America.
We've been funding it, yes.
Yeah, we've been funding it, and we've been putting ourselves at risk, too. It's not just the money, you know, but the idea, they don't have any nuclear missiles, or they have very small nuclear arsenals in France and Britain. You know, the main risk of nuclear wars has been on the United States.
Yeah, they want it to fall on us.
Yeah, how many, you know, now we have to face up to nuclear threats from Russia, from China. Now we're facing a nuclear threat from this madman in North Korea. Can he be deterred? You know, this is asking an awful lot. Now, why should America, the American people, put their civilization at risk for the national security of countries that are far away and haven't done enough to protect themselves? You know, Japan, South Korea,
right,
the Philippines, and the like. And that's a legitimate point of view. That's a legitimate point of view. But it's what the Russians and Chinese are also gambling on, that we will see that the threat is so, and risks to us are so high from North Korea, that without even having to fight a war with us, that we will retreat into our own shores, and the global order will change. The period of Pax Americana will go away, and now they will have their opportunity.
No, I understand.
To grab the South China Sea, to grab, take over NATO Europe, you know. So this is what I think about. You ask me, I mean, these are the stakes. It's more than North Korea, you know. There's, when you understand what's really going on in the world here.
I think it's Russia, China, and North Korea, and Iran.
This is an enormous chess game that's being played out.
Correct.
An enormous chess game with all these players, with the stakes being the future of the world.
That's exactly what I told Michael. I said it's a chess game. One last question. Do you think it would be better for us to just take out the leadership in Korea?
Yes. The North Korean totalitarian regime is extremely fragile,
mm-hmm,
in the sense that, I mean, they have more men under arms than the U.S. Army, okay? And they're very dangerous in terms of they're strong in a lot of respects, you know, in terms of their military capabilities. Right? But the glue that holds that whole society together is one man. You know, North Korea advertises itself as a Stalinist dictatorship, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But what it really is a theocracy dedicated to the worship of Kim Jong-un, whose people are told constantly.
I think he's a god.
Kim believes it himself, that he's a god, yeah, some kind of demigod. And I think that if the wicked witch, as it were, or wicked wizard, were taken out, you know, that system would collapse.
Yeah. I think that would be less expensive and probably save lives.
Yeah, in the long run. People will say, well, something worse could come along. It's hard to imagine something worse than what we've got there. I think that we need to... My solutions are, I would not... I would not use that as a substitute, though, for doing what we need to do to defend ourselves. You know, we need to bring back Ronald Reagan's vision, the strategic defense mission, and have space-based missile defenses that can render nuclear missiles obsolete. You know, we need to harden our electric grid against EMP effects so that it's not just North Korea. I mean, I think Iran has already got the bomb, despite what the Obama administration was saying. And I think one of these days we're going to wake up to that reality, and we're going to have to do the North Korea thing all over again with Iran.
Right. Dr. Pry, is the Trump administration more open to meeting with you and to moving forward with some of these solutions than the Obama administration was?
Oh, absolutely. It's the difference between night and day. We never got in to see the Obama administration once in the 8 years of the Obama administration.
Wow.
I and Dr. Graham, we've actually got friends on the National Security Council staff. We've been to the White House. I haven't had a chance. I did brief President Trump before he became president, when he was in Iowa. So I haven't had a chance since he became president to actually brief the man himself. But we've been in several times, to see the National Security Council staff.
Excellent.
And we hope that will continue.
All right. You give us hope. Dr. Peter Pry, thank you so much for all the work you do and for
such
doing
a great guest.
Yep. All the work you're doing to keep us safe. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Thank you again. Thank
all right.
you too.
Take care.